Attorney General. He's born and raised in St. Louis, graduated the University of Missouri, the University of Missouri School of Law, as well as an MBA from Washington University in St. Louis. In 2013, he was sworn in as his second term as our 41st Attorney General. Before that, he served in the Missouri Senate from Cass, Johnson, Bates, and Vernon counties. Also served as a prosecuting attorney. Please join me in welcoming Attorney General Chris Koster.
Can I have one of these waters?
Yes.
Well, let me say what an honor it is to be with you today. It truly is, this is a big day and an important day. You know, since 1915, this organization has been the voice of agriculture in the state of Missouri. And I have many friends in this room today, people that I talk to regularly and I reach out to for advice on agriculture and other issues around this state. And I want to thank them because I am profoundly grateful to those people who have helped me along the way. I have led governmental organizations in this state for 22 years. I started out as prosecuting attorney in Harrisonville, Missouri, which is a town of 20,000 people about 60 miles south of Kansas City. I helped people through the criminal justice system there. I was also the county attorney. Life circulated around a 105-year-old courthouse on an old county square, just the way it does in 105 other communities in this state. After 10 years of doing that, I came to the Missouri State Senate and served for 4 years there, which is essentially, I think, the board of directors of the state of Missouri, and that's where I began to get to know many of you. I've now served as Attorney General of the state for 8 years. I'm essentially the general counsel of a $27 billion corporation with 53,000 employees, 16 divisions that reach into every aspect of our life here in the state, including the aspect that we're here to talk about today, agriculture. By education, as Blake mentioned, I have an undergraduate degree from the University of Missouri. I have a law degree from the University of Missouri Columbia. And I have a master's in business administration from Washington University. I consider myself a conservative, business-oriented Democrat. I was in favor and worked alongside, in a bipartisan way, worked alongside Republicans in the Missouri Senate and House to pass the tax cuts of 2014, to lower taxes in this state to the lowest level since 1921. I have A rating with the National Rifle Association, which is among the candidates who remain in this race for governor, the highest rating in this race for governor, with the NRA in this race. And I have a pretty good knowledge of this town and a pretty good knowledge of the importance of the decision that you're going to make today and the significance of it. And I know what you know. That in the last 50 years, there have not been two candidates for governor that have come before you with a more significant contrast between the contributions that they have made for agriculture already and the promise that they hold for opportunity for growth and expansion in the future. I believe that Missouri agriculture deserves a governor who knows the difference between the PSC and PSF. I want to go through my background of what has been accomplished over the last 12 years since I came to Jefferson City, and then I want to talk to you about what I'd like to achieve going forward. First, my record. I came to the Missouri Senate in 2004. There were 34 senators, as you know, in the Missouri Senate. I was the only senator between 2004 and 2008, Republican or Democrat, who had a perfect Farm Bureau voting record. Not Danny Clemens, not David Clint, not John Cawthorn, not even Bill Stoffer had a perfect Farm Bureau voting record during that period of time. There was one, and it was myself. I'm the only candidate in this race who has served on an agriculture committee in the Missouri legislature. In 2006, I carried the eminent domain bill, which was the bill to protect private property rights in the wake of the Kelo versus New London decision that threatened private property rights of every single person in this room. And for those whose memories go back that far, you will remember that the bill was stuck in the mud in the Missouri legislature. And Mike Gibbons took it from Jason Crowell, who is a friend and a good man, but it was stuck in the mud. And right before spring break, Senator Gibbons said, give it to Koster, see if he can get it out of the mud. When everyone else went home for spring break, I stayed. We stayed with Dick Burke from Missouri Association of Counties, with Barry Hart from the co-op, the electrical co-ops, with Charlie Cruz from this organization, with the developers from the cities. Nobody left. Everybody in the legislature, 196 other legislators left. One stayed, and these interest groups stayed. And in those 7 days, we solved the problem. And when the legislature came back, the bill was out of the mud and ready to pass, and everyone had come forward for an agreement, signed on the dotted line, and Charlie Cruz called it the gold standard of eminent domain legislation in the country. And Jason Crowell said that it was one of the most amazing political demonstrations of bringing people together that he had ever seen. Now, Charlie Cruz rewarded me with that victory by allowing me to carry the CAFO bill the next year. I had seen John Cawthorn get his head kicked in on the CAFO bill. I understand how people of both parties dive for the exits. And I took it on, and I got my scars and bruises just the same. But there are two elements that I'm glad about that I took that bill on for. The first is that I got in the ring by myself for agriculture in this state on the hardest issue there is, at least over there in that building, which is holding back and curtailing the encroachment of health ordinances into the regulation of your businesses. The second is, it allowed me to get brain deep inside DNR, to understand the CAFO regulations in a way that no elected official, in my belief, in the state has. Not only did I defend this organization in the legislature, I've defended you in the courtrooms as well. Robert Brundage and I were in the Missouri Supreme Court together, making sure that the nuisance laws, the anti-nuisance laws that were passed several years ago, were upheld. He and I defended that together to make sure that your farms were protected. I inherited Jay Nixon's 10-year litigation against Smithfield at a time when it was all entangled, and Smithfield was threatening to leave this state, leave Northwest Missouri. And we settled it in a way that Bill Holman remains my friend. Smithfield remains an organization that is alive and strong in this state. And there are thousands and thousands of Missourians in Northwest Missouri that remain gainfully employed through an incredibly productive organization. One of the first cases that I had when I became Attorney General was Arrow Rock. You remember that Judge Joyce had put a 15-mile buffer zone around Arrow Rock related to the application of a CAFO permit there. John Watson, in my first days as Attorney General, called and said, let the Arrow Rock decision stand. We don't need to bother that. And I said, even though I was a brand new Attorney General, and Nixon had been here for 16 years as Attorney General, now was the governor, I said, we cannot let the Arrow Rock decision stand. Because if 435 judges in this state can draw a 15-mile buffer zone around anything they want, then we won't have animal husbandry in our state. It has to be overturned. I get that people are mad, but we have an agreement in this state, and that is that there is one organization that regulates agriculture, and that's DNR. It is not 435 associate circuit judges. And so I went to the Western District Court of Appeals and got it overturned. And then in 2011, when the Army Corps of Engineers was threatening to blow up the Birds Point levee, I had gone down to the federal courts, argued the case myself, lost the federal regulations on behalf of the Army Corps of Engineers are overwhelmingly against the states. Everybody in this room knows that. We took it up to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, lost again. And all my advisors said, look, we got to get along with the Supreme Court. The dynamite is set to go off. My recollection was on a Sunday evening, it's over, the laws are totally against us. And I said, no. If the Army Corps of Engineers is going to put half of Mississippi County 15 feet underwater, then Justice Alito can get out of bed on Sunday morning and come in and say it with his own voice. And so we got Justice Alito out of bed. And we know what happened, but it is just like the CAFO issue, proof that when I get in the ring for you, I stay in the ring for you. You can't put Mississippi County 15 feet underwater and not have the advocates for this state go all the way in defending Missouri farmers. In the political arena, I have stood with you. I traveled around this state with my friend to my left and others in this room to get Right to Farm passed. We started with a speech right out there in that room, and then we got in an airplane and barnstormed this entire state. And it passed, the Right to Farm Amendment passed by 1,000 votes. And there are some people in this room, I won't name names because I don't want to take anybody out, but who have said that Koster may have brought those an extra thousand Democrats with him as he campaigned for Right to Farm. I have gotten money for CAFNR. We all know how important these research centers are. And throughout my time, I was looking for opportunities at the Attorney General's office to get money to Dean Payne. And so through the tobacco settlement, we found a way to get money up to Dean Payne. And I have fought harder for this room than I think any Attorney General in the country on a national stage as well. You all remember the egg case where the legislature in California tried to regulate the size of hen cages across the country by changing the law in California. And we know how dangerous that is, not just for egg producers, but for hog producers, for GMO crops. Someday Sacramento is going to overstep its bounds. This theory is going to win. And while we lost in the federal court in California, we remain, it still is a fight that is ongoing. It is not over yet. We are still fighting to this day in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in California. Because when the state of California thinks that it can regulate national agriculture, it is a violation of the Commerce Clause. I sued the Environmental Protection Agency over the mercury rule in the U.S. Supreme Court and won. I sued the Environmental Protection Agency over the Clean Power Plan, which would have spiked electrical rates in your towns and cities, and won. And I was the first Attorney General in the country to sue Barack Obama's Environmental Protection Agency over the Waters of the United States rule and won. And the Waters of the United States regulations were never applied in this state. And we were part of the wave that got it kicked out nationally. That is what I've done in the past. Let me tell you what my goals for the future are. The election is November 8th. The results will be in by about 10:30. My great hope is that at 10:30 I will pick up the telephone and call Richard Fordyce and ask him to remain as the Director of Agriculture in the state. Richard and I are great friends. We travel the state together, working on agricultural issues. We were in Southwest Missouri the other day. We also have a tremendous First Lady of Agriculture. Most of you know Renee. We were traveling through Southwest Missouri not too long ago. Richard was driving. I was in the passenger seat. Renee was in the back seat, quoting transportation costs for a bushel of corn from Bethany to the Chicago Board of Trade. I turned around. I said, Richard, now I get why you're so successful. That's what I'm going to do on November 8th. The swearing in is on January 9th. It occurs at noon. At 12:30, my hope is that I will go up to the second floor office and there will be two folders on the desk. The first folder will release the withhold on the biodiesel incentive fund so that Richard Fordyce before 1 o'clock on January 9th will begin to form the agreements that have been promised in Mexico and in Cuba, in South America, in the Pacific Rim, in Europe, and in Japan, so that by the end of this fiscal year that we are currently in, FY17, we will have this network of international trade offices set up and working on your behalf. The second folder will be the biodiesel incentive fund withhold release, because that money has been promised and paid for by this Missouri legislature but has been withheld, and this debt needs to be paid off, and there's no reason not to pay it off quickly. On January 18th, about 10 days later, is the State of the State address. I'm going to ask the General Assembly if they will take the new market development and export responsibilities and build a partnership between the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Economic Development so that it does not reside purely over at the Department of Economic Development. Look, if I thought that I could move it completely over to Ag, I would. But Richard's organization is a $30 million organization, and when they were doing the soybean swabs on the dicamba drift the other day, they barely have the 30 grand to go do that work. They don't have the resources over there as we currently exist to take on this responsibility. But they have the knowledge and they have the enthusiasm. And the Department of Economic Development, as everybody in this room knows, has the expertise but not the enthusiasm. And so I want to ask for these opportunities to be moved over to a joint partnership between the two organizations. And I believe that the General Assembly will say yes. And every fall, as we move toward that state of the state, one other thing. I'm going to appoint a Department of Economic Development director who understands that agriculture is economic development. The Department of Economic Development's job is not simply tax credits for car companies and tax credits for airplane manufacturers, but this is the number one industry in the state of Missouri, and they need to get their act and get it together around promoting agriculture nationally and internationally, value-added products, export opportunities, and we're going to put that together. And as we move toward these State of the State speeches, and I've sat through now 12 of them, we're going to come together as a group, you and the commodities, and choose what the priority for the given year is. Is it new market development and export? Is it a meat lab and abattoir for the University of Missouri, for Don Nicodem's group? Is it B5? Is it stopping the encroachment of health ordinances? Is it funding for CAFNR? We're going to choose these goals, and we're going to choose them together. And they're not going to be mentioned in the last 10 minutes or 5 minutes of the State of the State speech. I mean, as I said, I've sat through all of Governor Blunt's and all of Governor Nixon's, and a lot of years, ag doesn't even get in there. When they do, it's at the 40th minute when, you know, the ideas are rolling out like gumballs every couple of seconds. Agriculture, economic development and agriculture needs to be in the first 10 minutes of that thing, so that Mike Kehoe and Ron Richard and Todd Richardson understands that this is the priority for the year. And let me tell you, I think, what is going to happen. When a conservative Democrat stands up in the dais of that joint session, two things will occur. The first is a Democratic Party that has largely become disconnected from agriculture in the state, unfortunately, tragically, doesn't know that we're all going to Delta Days in 3 weeks, is going to say, that governor up there, he's a conservative Democratic ag governor, and we're going to follow him. And those votes are coming with me. But here's what else is going to happen, and this is even better. Those Republicans that are sitting out there, they are not going to let me out-ag them. There is no way that Kehoe and Ronnie Richard are going to let me out-ag them. And if I point the way, these guys are going to come with us like water bursting out of a dam. And we will have opportunities like we have not seen since the old timers left. since before term limits. I know the people in this room. I have studied what you do. I have been your lawyer for 8 years. I know the folks in soybeans and corn and cattle, turkeys, cotton, hogs, rice, sawmills, research facilities, river terminals, dairy. I have a perfect record with you. Like no candidate, Republican or Democrat, first time, who's ever come before you in 50 years. Many of you, I know your names. You have my cell phone numbers. And I can bring Republicans and Democrats together around this issue in a way that we haven't seen in decades. That is one choice that you have. The other choice is to just go back and start from scratch in the hopes that you can beat this opportunity. I assume there are a few of you who played blackjack in this room. If you landed on 21, don't take another hit. Be happy to take your questions.
All right, we've got a microphone, so when we get some questions, we'll wait till they get the mics.
Somebody asked a question on transportation, I hope.
Good morning. Thank you for coming, Mr. Koster.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to know a little bit more about your stand on the Affordable Care Act. I think you were one of the attorney generals that chose not to get involved in the lawsuit when other attorney generals across several states were suing the federal government. And I can tell you, I'm an outgoing county commissioner, but I will tell you that the increases, we're 50% and larger in the premiums, is such a burden on the counties. The second thing I would ask you to comment on is DED. You know, the rural areas are at a significant disadvantage because of the way DED operates and also right to work. When a business decides they're looking at coming to the state of Missouri, they have, if you will, a checklist that DED goes through, and they look for the most advantageous area to put that business for, you know, highways, rail, population, et cetera. And right to work, I can tell you, when Beretta decided they were going to leave Maryland, I was in contact with Beretta trying to get them to come out here, and one of the things they were afraid of was right to work. And I want to know also, would you be willing to allow each individual county, if you will, to become a county, giving them the ability to sidestep right to work, like home rules, so that we as an individual counties can do what we need to do to try to draw manufacturing and good paying jobs to the individual counties across the state? I'll finish. One county in Kentucky has already done that, and they're luring businesses into their county. Thank you.
Okay. You asked about 30 minutes worth of questions there. But I want to talk about, let me start with this Affordable Care Act question because it's super important. Let me start out with a basic thing that I bet we all agree on. This state would go to war before we let the federal government tax us on the federal gas tax if they told us that we were never going to get any money out of the Federal Highway Trust Fund. If we were taxed on the federal gas tax and told that we were never going to get any money out of the Federal Highway Trust Fund, we would be insane with anger. But that's exactly what is happening. Exactly what is happening under the Affordable Care Act. Every year, the federal government sends the Republicans in the legislature a check for $2 billion. Now, you all are smart folks, and you know that we have an $8 billion general revenue. So a check for $2 billion is a pretty big check. And every year, they take that check and they tear it into a bunch of little pieces and they throw it down the toilet. For 3 years in a row, it has gone uncashed. Now, why do they do this? The Republicans in the legislature are doing this because they're sending a signal of pride to a man who's only going to be in the Oval Office for another 4 or 5 months. And they are telling him that they don't like the way he passed the Affordable Care Act in 2010. And I get it. It was a Frankenstein of a bill. But while this chest pounding makes us feel good, and I can see that they feel good about it because they tell me they feel good about it, that pride did not keep open the hospital at Osceola, and it did not keep open the hospital at Mount Vernon, and it did not keep open the hospital in Farmington, and it did not keep open the hospital in Reynolds County, all of which that have closed in the last 30 months. And there will be more that close in the next 24 months, because under the new structure, rural Missouri is losing a hospital every 8 months now in this state. There are people in this room, I imagine, who don't like your boss every day. But my bet is that you cash your check every month. We may not like the way the Affordable Care Act was passed. And contrary to what you said earlier, I did file against the president and said that the insurance mandate was a violation of the Commerce Clause in my document in the Missouri Supreme Court. I'll come back to that in a minute. We may not like the way the Affordable Care Act was passed, but if it is here to stay, then we should hold our nose and take the damn money. When a farmer strokes out in his combine in St. Clair County, there's a clock that starts ticking. His wife's got 60 minutes. First, Andy, she's got to find him. Then she's got to get him into an ambulance and get him to a hospital. She's got to get a needle stuck in his arm and TPA injected up into his brain in the hopes that that TPA will loosen the clot. If she beats the clock, that old boy will be back in his combine in 3 weeks. If she doesn't beat the clock, he'll spend the rest of his life in the third bedroom. When games are going on over there, where $2 billion is at stake, and political pride is being elevated over that woman's well-being and that county's well-being and our state's health care, folks, it makes life in rural Missouri harder. That is why I think we should take the money and invest it in health care in rural Missouri. Is there anybody else who wants to question in, or do you want, what do you want to do? Can we ask, can we cover transportation before I'm out of time?
Yep, absolutely.
I'll ask the question. What the heck are we going to do about transportation? Look, I'm bewildered by the dialogue in the primary so far on the transportation issue on the other side. When the transportation budget is underfunded, it's rural Missouri that takes it on the chin. The Grandview Triangle gets built. It is a monstrosity of engineering genius. Pete Ron, before he left 8 lanes of concrete from the Missouri River into Cardinals Baseball Stadium. You want to take your car down those roads, it's smooth and it's quiet. Everything's moving fine. It's the lettered roads that are not on the STIP. It's the lettered roads that aren't on the state transportation implementation plan. It's the 681 bridges in your backyard that are getting hurt. Now, when Kehoe was on the commission and the commission was fully funded, we had $1.7 billion that was invested there. Now we have $1.2 billion that's invested there. We are $500 million in debt over there. That's before we start talking about Highway 70, by the way. That $500 million does not include Highway 70. Now, the dialogue in the primary on the other side has been around, well, we got to rebuild trust. at the Department of Transportation, and we need to cut out waste, fraud, and abuse. Everybody in this room needs to understand the size of the problem. $500 million. If we went over to that state capitol and shut down the University of Missouri Columbia, shut it down, lights out, air conditioner off, boarded up forever, and we shut down the University of Missouri at Rolla, and we shut down the University of Missouri at St. Louis, and we shut down the University of Missouri at Kansas City, all of them closed for all time, we'd still be $20 million short. We'd still have to go to Warrensburg and shut down the University of Central Missouri. You can't fill a $500 million deficit by telling Patrick McKenna to stop the commissioners from flying the airplane. If this is the cotton candy that is going to pass for public policy in our state, then we're in a heck of a lot of trouble. If I'm still employed in this state in January, then I'm going to sit down with Mike Kehoe and Doug Leibla and others, and we are going to work to put together a rational funding plan for the Missouri Department of Transportation. I mean, I ran into John. How much time do I have? I ran into John Ashcroft the other day, and he and I had about 30 minutes to talk with one another. And I said, it's good to see you. He and I have a good relationship. You know, I used to be the leader of the Republicans in the Senate not so long ago. And so he and I are friendly, and there's a lot that I admire about John. And I said, well, first I said, you know, John, I'm one of your biggest defenders in the Democratic Party. And he said, well, Chris, that's a very low bar, so. I said, well, be that as it may. I said, I tell people every day that I know that we can fix this transportation problem because the last time it got fixed by the most conservative man in the state of Missouri, John David Ashcroft, who in 1992 raised the gas tax from 11 cents to 17 cents. And John said, well, that's not the whole story. I said, tell me the whole story. He said, you're forgotten that in my first term, I raised the gas tax from 7 cents to 11 cents. And in my second term, I raised it from 11 cents to 17 cents. And by the way, that 17 cents in 1992, which has not been touched in 24 years, today has a buying power of eight cents. That's the problem. He said, this is John talking. He said, I raised the gas tax 140% in my time as governor of the state. And these folks over at the state legislature, clearly, I believe he was referring to the Republicans in leadership there, think that being conservative means refusing to raise taxes even on a problem like this. He said, Chris, do you know what conservatism is? I felt like I needed a pen at this point because I was starting to write things down. I said, what is it, John? He said, conservatism is paying your debts and not passing them on to the next generation, which is exactly what we've been doing at the Department of Transportation for 15 years. There are well over $1 billion of unpaid bills sitting on Jay Nixon's desk right now. Trust me, folks, I am a proud conservative Democrat in the sense of the word that those my age and older have to go back 30 years to find. I'm not trying to lead some liberal revolution in this state by any stretch. My goodness, the Republicans in the Senate elected me as their leader 10 months after I arrived in the state Senate. I'm trying to keep this place from falling apart. And these cotton candy answers that before we will examine any funding proposal to help rural Missouri that we got to rebuild trust over at the Department of Transportation, that's one path. That is certainly one path. But it's not going to get your 600 bridges fixed. 5 minutes?
Yeah, we got question for time for one question. Quick one. Yeah, quick one. And then we'll let you
all right.
wrap up.
Oh, well.
Hi, my name is Julie Neal. I'm from the Harrisonville area.
Oh, good.
I'm a dairy farmer.
Yes.
A struggling dairy farmer, contemplating taking the option of losing everything I have by quitting for half of my adult life. So I would like to know if you plan to continue, and I understand I'm a very small percentage here. I want to know if you will continue to support the Dairy Revitalization Act and make sure it's funded.
Absolutely. The answer is yes.
Okay, thank you.
Wrap up? I feel like I got most of the things I came to say off my chest. So I thank you for your friendship. And I think if I left you with one point, it is that I have served in the leadership of both political parties, and I believe I'm the only Missourian who has. And I think that what we need is leadership that understands this state, knows your names, understands your businesses, and knows our government. Brian Munslinger put in an amendment at the very end of the session, not going through committee or anything, to change the number of positions that agriculture can have on the Clean Water Commission from 2 to not less than 6. And most of the folks in the legislature don't understand much about ag anymore, and it went through, and I think Nixon vetoed it. Now, because it hadn't gone through committee and it had not been vetted on both sides. This room has a choice between 2 governors. One governor would have an aide come into the office and say, this is what just happened. And he would say, okay, what is the Clean Water Commission? How many people are on it? Get me a memo. What does the Department of Natural Resources do? Where is the Department of Natural Resources, by the way? Because it ain't in the Truman Building. And I think I remember who Brian Munslinger is, but can you point him out? And one governor would say, Munsey did what? That's so classic, Brian. Bev, call Senator Munslinger's legislative assistant and tell him I'll be up in 5 minutes. I want to talk with him. I appreciate your friendship. Thanks, everybody.
Okay, we will shortly adjourn to your breakout sessions. If there's anybody that has any questions, find your regional coordinator and they'll help get you to where that room is.